So which way would be passive from? The sash is going in both ways. Remember, we talked about tetracycline resistance is due to the presence of that pump in the membrane, but it also makes the organ sensitive to our gas. Okay? So if you got tetracycline resistance, you're also sensitive to this pump. If you want to select for loss of that resistance, you select for sarcastic gas. It's already sensitive to sarcastic gas. Now don't think about negative. Forward reverse. Think forward reverse. So if you're selecting for tetracycline resistance, you do that now. Right. You want to select for loss of tetracycline resistance. The loss of tetracycline resistance, I had to go backwards to tetracycline sensitivity. We already talked about what happens when the organism is resistant to tetracycline, with the phenotype associated with that. Right. As a result of that, what else happened? What is the other thing that that's associated with? We just talked about it. We saw it dance.
Yes, but I don't understand how it's
affected. Membrane is altered. So the tetracycline and the pump. But it also makes that alteration in the membrane makes the organism sensitive to sarcastic.
Yes, that means due to that alteration in that form, the prosthetic acid can get in. So it is the prosthetic acid is harmful for the. So.
That's why we're talking about sensitivity. It's sensitive to
prosthetic acid. Oh, now I understand. Means that's why I was thinking the wrong way. I should think, I shouldn't think it as negative and positive.
No, it's forward reverse.
Like something, like there's a
character,
like tetracycline resistance.
Mm-hmm.
From that point, we can go
forward tetracycline resistance.
Forward to select for tetracycline resistance, and from that point, I can also go back.
You can go reverse.
Reverse.
For tetracycline sensitivity.
To select for the mutation which is having tetracycline, loss of tetracycline resistance.
Right. Okay, let's be short, yes.
I was thinking that both is harmful, then why one is
positive? Yes, yeah, so.
this gene has been transport of this.
Right. So that gene encodes two functions. Multiple transport, also the entrance port for
this lambda, yes, lambda star. So like we can go forward and select this by experiment by going on
marker
from medium.
Middle medium?
Yes.
With more
yes. Okay. And if we want to go back, this go backward in the reverse direction. So we can like select whether it is sensitive to left.
Right.
Am I right? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, initially the original question was there a galactic alpha. You said there could be a double mutation or a suppressor. And that's just, that answer works with the question and the fact that it removes the formal group comes off and then this double mutation brings it back on.
No, it's a, if you have a mutation in the enzyme that puts on formal group. So that they don't get formulated at all. Then you can have a mutation in the gene, the DEF gene, which is the deformulase. Okay? So the deformulase is an essential gene. If you don't remove the formal group from the thiamine, then the bacteria die. So you can't get a mutation in the DEF gene, which is the deformulase, because it's a lethal mutation. So the question is, how do you get a mutation in the DEF gene? And the answer is that you have a second mutation, which is in the formulation. So we put the form, not formulation, but it was the formulation. We put the formal group on the thiamine. So if it doesn't formulate from the thiamine, then there's no need for the enzyme to be formulated. So you can get those mutations.
Would another possible answer to the question be if you had a structure similar to the formal group that was recognized by the protein, the
structure similar to the formal group?
Yeah.
That was recognized by?
So that it would start replication and stuff like
that? Well, it's not involved in replication.
Oh. I mean, so that it knows where to start.
Whatever. Translation?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that the fact that you can get mutants that don't formulate the methionine means that N-formulated methionine is not actually required for initiation of translation. So you can do without that. The bacteria will work for you. But it's not a requirement.
Okay. Then you mentioned something about cassettes or to gene rearrangement. Cassettes are structures or gene rearrangements with expression of H2 flagellin and phage. What did you mean by that?
H2 flagellin, not phage. Just H2 flagellin.
Okay. But what did you mean by that?
There's a cassette that is part of the gene for preference flagellin that inverts. And one orientation, the promoter is facing the structural gene for flagellin, so the flagellin is expressed. The other orientation, it's in the opposite direction. So if the promoter is not pointing the right way, the flagellin gene doesn't get expressed. That's the phase variation, which is expression of the gene being off and on.
Oh, that's the phase variation.
That's phase variation. Off and on expression.
Okay, done. Nonsense suppressor tRNA. That causes a mutation, the nonsense mutation to not work. So in other words, you don't stop, you don't have a stop. But how does this work? You run on and on about it, and I just didn't get the flight.
Okay, what part?
The whole flight.
You get the flight. It works.
Oh.
This translation is continuous, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But how is it the translation between the gas and flight?
The stop sign is removed.
the second site mutation. I'm the worst mutation. Mutations are the same.
So there's a mutation in DNA and it hops over the stop sign?
No, what would happen? What's a tRNA record?
Recognizes the codon.
Right, triple codon, right? So if you have a stop codon, what's going to recognize the stop codon? tRNA going to recognize it? Stop codon, there's no tRNA to recognize. Right. So how do you get a mutant tRNA that will now recognize the stop codon? How do you alter the tRNA?
I don't know.
Well, how does the tRNA recognize the codon in the DNA?
It changes its shape and it...
What's the business end? It does have a very intricate three-dimensional structure. What's the business end?
It has some codon, I mean, some letters there.
Yeah, where the letters are part of what we call these. It recognizes the codon. What do you think the part of the tRNA is called?
Another codon, a whole codon?
So if the anticodon on the tRNA recognizes the codon. Okay, so what do you think has to happen to the tRNA so it can now recognize the stop codon?
The codon must shift so that it can recognize?
The codon must shift.
New letters going.
New letters going. The anticodon is mutated so that there's a different codon. Different anticodon to recognize stop codon.
So
do you know how to anticodon is put on board?
The anticodon is on the tRNA, the codon is on the strand that it's doing.
Right.
And then it eventually changes into the protein.
Yeah, but do you know how the anticodon is codon recognizes?
Well, I think letters, nucleotides, they come in and at the third position, I think it's called model, it doesn't have to be exactly right on the last position because
well, let's get the last position for them. Get back to the fundamentals. How do they interact?
They interact, I would imagine, via hydrogen bonds.
Yeah, so they interact by complementary base. They can, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, that's how that works. So the question is, if the tRNA is anticodon, base pairs recognize the codon in order to put in the tRNA, what has to happen to the anticodon in order for it to recognize the stop codon? Right?
Okay.
So that's what the matrix question is.
So the stop codon also has to change.
No. Hey, go back and read over.
I definitely read it last night.
Okay, go back and read over. It's not that difficult a concept. You have bits and pieces of it, but you're not putting it together.
Right.
Okay.
I know the end product, but I don't know why.
Yeah, you guys put that together.
Okay.
You got class coming in here?
Let's see. Why isn't translation stopped at all stop codon? Is this the same question?
Why isn't translation stopped at all stop codon?
Yeah.
It does stop at all stop codon. The question was, why doesn't that happen when you have a suppressor tRNA in the cell?
So this goes back to it,
The question was in the context of the suppressor tRNA. It wasn't taking it out of context. So the question is, why doesn't translation stop at all stop codons when you have a cell that's got suppressor tRNA in it?
So I'll look this one up. Then there are three types of conformational suppressors.
Mm-hmm.
The first is wild type and it works. So that's not a suppressor.
Right.
Okay, then there was the last type of suppressor mutation which restores activity, so like a double mutation.
Well, suppressors are a second mutation in some other cells that restores activity.
And what was the middle type?
different types of suppressor mutations?
Yes.
We had intragenic and extragenic. And among the extragenic suppressors, we had conformational, informational, and bigenic.
When you gave us this diagram, do you remember?
That's conformational.
This is conformational? Yes, yeah, they're all conformational, but yeah. What was the middle like line of that?
Well, the first one is when you have the subunits interacting under normal circumstances, it's a wild-type phenotype.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is there's a mutation in A so that it doesn't interact with B, the inactive enzyme.
Inactive enzyme.
Right. And then if you get a mutation in B such that it now can interact with A, you get transcription function. So that's where you have a conformation of mutation of distortion.
So here you made us this wonderful chart of specificity of suppressors.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the difference between a gene and an allele?
A gene is the DNA, then it goes to a particular function. Alleles are variants of that particular gene. Did you look up any of these terms in the glossary? Take a look at the glossary.
I have looked up some of them.
This will help you out.
But not all of them. An allele is a variant of a gene.
Look it up.
Yeah. And look up.
Let's go way that
far. Okay, let me just get my... We are probably going to be late.
Well, we're going to that. I'm going to MCB right now.
Which is where I will join you.
Okay, eventually. Sure. Yeah, we'll be there. If not, I'll let you know, okay?
Okay. I don't see it. Maybe they went away.
Yeah. Okay, what are the questions?
Okay, fine.
Just done.
Okay, you said there was two things. There was a monomeric protein and a multimeric protein.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand when you went about talking about the multimeric protein.
We'll talk about... All right, this is in the context of suppressor mutations, right? Dominant and negatives.
Yes.
Are you in the context of dominant and negatives?
Well, it depends on the
negative. Okay, so we'll explain it to you in other words.
So, our dominant mutation causes destruction of activity. Negative mutation.
No, it's the same thing. I'm not negative.
All right. Well, a negative suppressor then?
It's not a suppressor. It's a dominant negative mutation.
A negative part of the dominant mutation. So let's say you had a mutant and it inactivated the activity, the negative part reactivates it.
The dominant and negative mutation is when you have expression of the mutant allele at a high level. The overexpression of the mutant allele imposes the mutant phenotype over a wild type factor. So even if you have the wild type gene expressed, the dominant negative mutation can give you a mutant phenotype. Okay, and that's where the example of the monomeric protein was. You have the protein that binds to a substrate, an enzyme that binds to a substrate, and then modifies that substrate and releases it. You have a mutant of that enzyme that will bind the substrate and not release it. If that protein is overexpressed, you end up with a cell that is just titrating out all of that compound because it's being bound by the mutant protein. None of it available for the wild type. So the phenotype is dominant negative. Okay? That's what the monomeric protein is.
And what's the multimeric protein?
The multimeric protein, if you think about it, is that if you have to have two subunits together, right, in order to have activity, if you make enough mutant forms of one of those subunits, what's the relative proportion of heterodimers that are going to function in that population? So say you get 100,000 copies of A, and you get 1,000,000 copies of B, right? Mm-hmm. Let's see, you get 100,000 copies of A, and you get 100,000 copies of B.
Same thing.
Right. And then you have 500,000 copies of mutant form of B. Alright. So how many dimers are you going to get in order to function? It's a numbers game here. Okay? So you got the mutant form interacting with the wild type form and diluting out the population so that you don't have enough of those monomers to interact in order to give you the wild type form. Because again, just the numbers, you think about it. You can draw them all out. So you've got A and you got B. One-to-one interaction, A and B. Right? Mm-hmm. If you make 5 times or 100 times more mutant B, what are the chances that A is going to find a good copy of B? And what are the chances that it's going to find a mutant copy of B? And if it interacts with a mutant copy of B, you don't have a functional activity. Right? That's where the dominant negative comes in.
I may ask you about this again in the future. It's just not making sense.
Sketch it out. You know, make your A's and B's, right? Mm-hmm. And they have to interact with each other to get a functional protein. And you have heterodimer, A, B, right? Mm-hmm. Exactly. So normally A and B are produced the same amount, same concentration, same molar ratio, right? Makes sense. Let's say you make more of the mutant copy of B, much more than the mutant copy of B. Mm-hmm. What's the phenotype of that organism going to be because of the wild type?
And why? It looks like the mutant B.
It's going to look like it doesn't have activity. Right?
Well,
okay. It's making B. Make a wild type B. Right?
I'm going to try drawing it out, and okay. Chances are out still.
Okay. If you think of anything else, send me an email or stop by and get my good notes. Okay?
Where are you looking at again?
B4.
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon.